Today's daf in Masechet Sanhedrin is daf Tzadik Aleph. We were holding in the middle of these various conversations that were essentially attacks, whether it was by the Minim or by Caesar or by Cleopatra. Anyway, we've got another one. And today, we'll start with Amale Ahumino Lurba Ami. Amrita de Shachve Chayet. So he had the same taina. Vahavi Afra. They're just dust. Afra mikachai. I mean, did you ever see dust come alive? Amarlei emshalach hamashal. Lema davar dome. The melech basar vadam. Shomar levadav. Lechuv nuli platrin gedolim. So I think there's this king, and he has decided he's going to build a city in the desert, you know, like some kind of Saudi prince or something. And I want you to build it in a place where there's no water and there's no available clay to make any kind of bricks. And you're going to have to figure out what kind of building materials you're going to use. They did it. Alchu Vanoto, they went ahead, they developed the materials, and they got this new city in the sand made. Anyway, Liamim Naflu. So whatever years later, there was a collapse of the beautiful buildings they had built, Amar Lahem. So he said to them, all right, let's rebuild it in a place where we got normal building materials. You know, Chizru v'nuot ha'bamakum she'esh ha'fromayim. They said, we don't know how to build a building in a place like that. Ka'as ha'lehem. So the king gets very angry. He says, that's crazy. B'makum she'ein mayim v'ofra b'nitem. Akshav she'esh mayim v'ofra l'achat kama v'kama. That's ridiculous. If you knew how to build it, and you went to a place where you don't have any normal building materials, so what did you do? You decided to build a biological city using DNA. That was very impressive. Now I tell you to go ahead and build a cheapo city out of simple building materials, and that you say you can't do? You've gotten so committed to your new technology. Same thing is true over here. HaKadosh Baruch Hu builds all of these things with DNA. That is brilliant. Now you're saying, you know, but he could never figure out how to put dust together, could he? It's a little bit ridiculous, isn't it? And anyway, in Iyata Ma'amin, now this is based on this crazy thing that was believed all over the world. And of course, these conversations have nothing to do with what's true and what's not true. They just have to do with whatever silly approach is necessary in order to get people to see things differently, and that their prejudices about what is possible, what is impossible, are just prejudices. So anyway, I don't know how many of you have seen this. I mean, but the very old medical texts and the encyclopedias, they all have pictures of this thing. Is this supposed mouse, the field mouse is what was usually called, the German field mouse. Originally, they thought that the field mouse was made out of the field. That's why it was called the Feldemos. So what happened was that they would see whatever. I guess they probably saw animals that had burrowed underground that were completely covered with dirt. So they thought that these rodents gradually turned from dirt into actual living flesh. And this was believed all over the world. You can't imagine. This is in all of the old encyclopedias. The Rambam even says, I've heard this from hundreds of people. It seems absolutely insane, and it's a complete vartema, but I don't know how to explain the fact that everybody is seeing this nutty thing in any event. So he brings him a riot from this, you know? And if you don't think that that makes sense, why don't you just go out to the field, you know, Tselebika, Urei, and you'll see this type of rodent, Shayom Chetzio Basar V'Chetzio Adama. Today, it's only halfway converted from Adama into flesh. Tomorrow, you'll see that it's turned totally into Kulo Basar. So you see, such a thing is just very normal. Shama Tomal is Man Maruba. You think it takes a long time to manufacture things out of nothing. Go up to the mountaintop. Reisha Yomi Boelachi Lazom Echad. You got a rainfall. Today, there's like one snail crawling around up there. Tomorrow, go up there and you'll find millions of snails. Where all those snails come from? Look how quickly they develop from nowhere. So what's the big deal? You're wondering how we could just simply create these things en masse. Amar li ahu mina le gavia ben pesisa. It was also another one of these guys of the Tzedukim. So he says to Gevi'a ben Pasisa. Now, Gevi'a ben Pasisa was this really wild guy who was a hunchback. He was very smart, but he just was like a regular redneck guy, right? So he says to this Gevi'a ben Pasisa, and he had tremendous guts. So he says to him, you chayova, you sinners, the Amritan Meitei Chayin, you believe in this ridiculous doctrine that the dead will live, so you're going to end up living with your sins. You make yourself a hell, you know? If everyone alive ends up dying, is it a little bit stupid to say that the dying end up living? I mean, it goes against everything that we know over all of history, but you know that it's the other way around. So Gevi'a says to him, on the contrary, you're the guys who are going to get stuck when you find out that it's really true and you're actually sitting there with all your sins. So you're the ones who are chayava. Damritun meite lo chayin. I asked you, with your own logic, de lo havu chayin, whatever didn't exist, somehow or other came to be alive. So something that already was alive, that's problematic for you? That if it was alive, then it should live. How could that be? I got to use your same logic. So to have a chayin, something that was once possible, once alive, should live again? Omar Lay, this got the guy really angry. What? You call me chayavaya karitali? And I'm telling you, buddy, you better watch out. If I get up, I'm going to give you a kick that is so powerful that I'm going to be pashitna like mutchabinach. I'm going to get your humpback straight. That's what I'm going to do. I'm kick it up. Oh, said Gevi'a. Now, if you could do that, buddy, I think you would get an honorary medical degree. And imata osek en rofeu mantikare. There ain't no surgeon know how to do that. And if you can do that, let me tell you, you're going to make a lot of money. Sechar harbeti tohi. Who knows what you can charge for all of the elephant men that you're going to be putting back into shape. Anyway, this Gevi'a ben Pasisa, who was obviously had a definite sense of humor about himself. So this is a braita, and this braita sort of it's a parallel to the braita that we call Megillat Ta'anit, which also is a braita. However, this is not really accurate according to Megillat Ta'anit. It has different dates, but it doesn't matter. The idea is basically a parallel. The story, at least, is completely parallel, where Be'esrim ve'arba abenisas, you remember how the Megillat Ta'anit goes, just lists dates in which things happened that were considered to be worthy of remembering, and some of them were remembered with simcha. That there we go, Barnea is presenting you with the real version of Megillat Ta'anit, found under the ruins of Tel Aviv University in the year 2573. And anyway, so what we have over here is the story of different things, which sometimes they were so amazing that you weren't allowed to fast on that day, and you had even the days before you weren't allowed to fast, and some days you weren't allowed to say hespedim on. Anyway, so it would all follow the same format. On date X, Y happened, and the result is Z. No fasting, no hespedim, and so on. All right, so here it says, Be'esrim ve'arba abe Nisan. So on the 24th of Nisan, itnatilu dimusnai mi'Yehuda mi'Yerushalayim. The enemies, the ones who were trying to attack our rights to Yehuda and to Yerushalayim, they were terminated. And the story was, Kishubo b'nei Africa, ladunim Yisrael, lifnei Alexander's Mokadon. So the first invasion of the South Africans is not actually in our times where we have all our wonderful friends. It actually started way before in the days of Alexander Makedon. And he was the one who was approached by these Africans who were actually the Girgashi. And you will recall that the Girgashi, they went away from Eretz Canaan all on their own after they were told that we're going to be invading and anybody wants to leave should leave, and then you get away with your lives, we'll make you a deal, you can't refuse. And they left. Out of all the Canaanite nations, the seven different nations, the Girgashi moved to Africa. Anyway, so they saw their chance when Alexander captured the Palestine, what they hadn't yet come up with that idea. But anyway, with what ultimately, you know, the Romans are going to call Palestine. So these people, the Girgashi, they come and they bring suit against the Jews that were living in Eretz Yisrael. These people, meanwhile, had actually moved up to Eretz Canaan, to Eretz Yisrael, and they claimed that the Jews should be expelled from Eretz Canaan. Amrulo, Eretz Canaan shalanuhi, dichtiv, Eretz Canaan legvulotea. Even the Jews themselves, when they talk about the land that they are taking over and they give over the different pieces of land to the various Shvatim, they call it Eretz Canaan legvulotea. So, I mean, this is not even a case. They have no defense. They call it in their own holy books. They call it Eretz Canaan. So what is there to discuss? Now, we can prove that Canaan is actually our forefather. Canaan of Wunda Alun Shavi. He's us. Amalu Gavia Ben Pesisa Lechachomim. So this guy, Gavia Ben Pesisa, he tells Lechachomim, he says, listen, if you give me permission, I'll go handle this, okay? I'll tell you why you should let me go and handle it. I'm going to be Elik Vaduni Mandel from Alexander Melchizedek. If it turns out that they figure a way to answer me and I'm defeated in the court case, so then you go and send to Alexander and say, you got to be kidding. You listen to this nut, Gavia Ben Pesisa, the madman, the redneck, the hunchback. Well, why don't you ask for somebody intelligent? And then you can then go ahead and make a new case. But if I end up winning the case, so then you say to them, this case was not won by that jerk. It was won by the Teras Meisha, obviously. And anybody, even that weirdo Gavia Ben Pesisa, can argue against them if he has the Torah on his side. So then you tell them, Teras Moshe Nitzachachem. Okay, so they said, all right, sounds like a plan. So they send this Gavia Ben Pesisa, he goes into court in front of the king, and he says to them, all right, Amalayam, all right, let's just first lay down the rules of the debate over here. Mehechan atem mevi'im ra'aya. So what is going to be your source text for your debate? They said to him, hey, man, the source text is your own Torah, you know. Don't get after us with the source text. What are you going to do, reject your own Torah? I said, okay, very good. I accept that. Afani lo avilachem raya ela min haTorah. I won't discuss any other facts or purported facts, such as Tel Aviv University findings in the year 2573, which purport to show, etc. So here, you said that it was Canaan, and I agree with you 100%. The Torah means exactly what it says. I just wish to bring another piece of evidence, Alexander, sir. It says in that same book, which they agreed to, Oror Canaan, Eved Avadim Yiyele Echav. Now, as far as I know, the Semites, the children of Shem, are the Echav to whom these Avanim were given to. And what is the law of the land? If a slave gets these property, who owns the slave and who owns the property? Well, obviously, if Canaan was the Eved, then the land of Canaan belongs to the master, which is us, not to mention the little fact that has been troubling me for some years. It's been a number of centuries since you last worked for us, and I think it's time to get back on the job, wouldn't you say, guys? Shari kama shanim shalom avadatunu. So Alexander says to them, okay, it's time for your response. So they say to him, give us 3 days to work out a response. So he gives them the 3 days. Meanwhile, they see it's hopeless. Batku v'lo matzu tshuva. They couldn't find any kind of legal response to that. So they immediately left the country. And miyad barchu, the next day at the airport, there were long lines of Girgashi going back to South Africa. They had to reinstitute even El Al, my gosh. And they left everything behind. They left all their planted fields. They left all their vineyards. And you know how fortunate that was. The year that this took place was a Shemitah year. Food was very expensive. the Jews were having to pay all of these premium prices for Girgashi produce with the Batatz Hechsher, and now it was all free. A lovely story. And then there was another time, which the Gra doesn't like, another time, because in the Megillas Tainis, all of these attacks took place at the same time when Alexander was approached by three different groups. So anyway, the next court case was B'nai Mitzrayim. So the Egyptians came to sue the Jews, B'nai Alexander Mokadon, and they said, look, take a look in their Bible, and it says that the Jewish people were Hashem Natan et Chena Am Bein Mitzrayim VeHashilum, and the kind Egyptians who were so lovely to their slaves, they trusted them and lent them all of their money and all of their beautiful clothing, and these bums made off with everything from the country, and they owe us a lot of money, including Ribit VeHatzmada, and Ribit VeHatzmada, as you know, this is talking about in Israel, you know. So Ribit VeHatzmada basically means we own the country, and probably own their kids too, the way the banks here do. So it's all we ask, just give it all back. So Gavia ben Psisa says the same thing. Listen, let me be the one that goes and debates this, huh? So Tznuli Rishus, I will go, Alexandros, if they win the case. So then say, win the case. Against whom? This redneck hunchback. Had your chip on with the tzachtem. You took the lowest class person. That's not fair. And then you'll redo it. You know, open up the case again. But if I win, so the Chachamim said, okay, Gavia ben Psisa, you're off and running. Okay, let's just lay down the source text. Where are you going to be bringing your proofs from? So they said, only from your Torah, man. Okay, just via. So let us start with the historical background. So, okay, they lived there. There's 430 years, and they were working there. I just have a little bit of a spreadsheet over here, if the court gives me permission to present this as evidence. We have the typical labor wages in that time, multiplied by 600,000 people times 430 years equals, we want that money. Amalam Alexander Mokadon. Okay, what's your response? We need 3 days to work this out, they say to Alexander. All this accounting stuff, these Jews always do accounting. We'll get you the real accounting. Anyway, they too rush to the airport. Away they go, leaving Sedoteyem Kishen Zerot, Karmeyem Kishen Netuot, and wouldn't you know it, that year was exactly the year that we needed all of that stuff because it's a Shemitah year, and this way we had lots of free food. And then there was another time that the Arabs came along, B'nai Yishmael, B'nai Keturah, they also came, and they said, you know, I mean, there's supposed to be a two-state solution, because, after all, it was given to both of us, Eretz Kanan Shelanu V'Shelachem, it belongs to the Jews, but, you know, the Jews have usurped the whole thing, and all we want is our piece of the action, because, after all, it says, Ela Toldot Yishmael ben Avraham, and it says, Ela Toldot Yitzchak ben Avraham, and it was given to Abraham, and you heard of this, our trump card, of course, and we have these Abraham Accords, which means that we both get a share in this. So just let's, how about we sit down and do a little bit of land exchanges. So Gavia ben Psisa says to Chachomim, let me go handle this. So you tell him, that idiot, that's not even a human. But if I win, you say to them, Torah's Moshe Rabbeinu Nitzchatchem. Anyway, so they said, okay, go for it, Gavia. So, halach v'dani mayhem, and he says to them, all right, where are you going to bring your proofs from? Just from the Torah. What do you mean? Omer lo min haTorah. Okay, says Gavia, I will also only bring rayas from the Torah. So, you may note the pasuk, Vayitein Avraham et kol asher lo le Yitzchak, ulivnei apilakshima shel Avram natan Avram matanot, and he sent them away to the Orient. Now, I ask you, in a case where a father, while in his lifetime, he divides up his property, and he gives agitin lebanav b'chayav, he gives various gifts of inheritance to his different children, assigns them, each one of them, their piece of his property, and then he sends them away so that they don't get into any kind of family fights, puts thousands of miles between one and the other, and now they have to wait for flights from China to be able to come back and fight it out. I ask you something. Can you imagine one of them coming back and suing and saying, I'm supposed to split evenly after all of this was taken care of? Klum yesh lezel ze klum. I mean, what is there to discuss? It says that Avram split up things the way he wanted to and split the children up. What were those things, by the way? My matanot. What were these wonderful gifts that he gave to his b'nei apilakshim? Omer b'yirmiya baraba melamed shemasalem shem tum'ah. He gave them over shemas to be able to do all kinds of unclean things in the world. Oh, whatever this would be, you know, shadim and kishuf, whatever. Okay. Yeah.
This one, I mentioned the there's different girsas on Megillas Tainis, so one of them is that they ask for the Bechara. So it's Bedaf to saying Yishmal is the Bechara, which is interesting because we have it because of it. And
Reb Barnea, but it says over here we're only bringing Rayas from the Torah. All right.
Or Nindu B'nei Dumasai, mean Yerushalayim. See, it's Yerushalayim. So one is Yerushalayim, the other is Yerushalayim, whatever. But that's where to look for it in the text. This is the 25th of Sivan.
Yes, I know, Rabbanei. I mentioned that this is just a parallel. Yes, but remember, it's all back to the Divrei Torah, which for us is the Shas HaKadosh. Okay. Thank you. I'm just kidding. Anyway, so getting back to the story of the various ways in which there were communications between the Chachamim and whether it was Cleopatra or whether it was Caesar, the various minim, we also have these types of conversations between two very good friends. And that was the Caesar Antoninus and his good friend, who he accepted as his Rebbe, who was Rebbe, of course, Rebbe Yehuda HaNasi. And so the Gemara, in the context of these discussions about how to view the human condition and the idea of Tchiyas HaMeisim and the responsibility for chet and so on, so it brings up also the friendly communications in which Antoninus was the one who taught Rebbe, and Rebbe agreed that Antoninus was correct. So Antoninus once asked Rebbe. So obviously some of these are just limudim. In others, we have two things that Rebbe actually learned from Antoninus. So Antoninus said to Rebbe, Guf and Neshama, Yecholim Liftar Atzmam Min Hadin. You know, you got this interesting situation in which human beings are combined spirit and physical body. If you take those two things separately, and yet you treat this neshama as something and this goof as something, then there should be no responsibility from either, because ketza, I mean, the body can always say, look, obviously I'm not responsible to go to hell. I mean, I never did anything. The proof of the pudding is that it's only the neshama that does sins. The moment that this neshama has left me, I'm sitting here like a rock in the grave. I can't even move. So how can I be blamed for doing anything? Therefore, if anybody goes to hell, it's the neshama, not me. The neshama says, the whole issue is the body. Burn the body. I say, down with bodies. That's what I say. It's always the bodies that screw everything up. I'll prove it. From the day that I've been released from this awful thing, I'm flying through the air like a bird, free and happy and clear of all sin and thoughts. How can I sin if I don't have anything to sin with? So Rebbe said to Antoninus, a lovely taina. So let me give you a mashal. Mamad avar domeh. Here's this Melach Basar Adam who had a pardes na'eh. he's got this beautiful orchard, and in this orchard, he's got these incredible bakurot. No, bakurot are figs that they present their fruit. The first fruit in the season comes from these early bearing fig trees. So he wanted to have the type of people that would be guarding it that he wouldn't have to worry about them actually stealing. So he takes these two shomrim. One of them is lame, and one of them is blind. So one day, the chiger, the lame one, says to the suma, look, I can see. You can't see it. I'm telling you, man, I see these delicious figs. I say, let's go get them. All you need to do is you lift me up, put me on your shoulders, you know, and because I don't have any workable feet, and I can see them. I'll pick them. Then we'll come back here and we'll eat them. So sure enough, Rachav Chigera Gabi Suma. So he's on the back of the blind man. They take the figs. Anyway, Liamim Baba La Pardes comes along the king and he says, what happened to my figs? Bakurot Naot Eichanein. Chigera says, I don't know. I mean, heck, I can't even walk. I certainly couldn't have eaten them. And the blind guy says, gee, something happened to figs. I didn't know there were figs here. I don't even have any seeing eyes. So what did the king do? He puts the guy without the feet on the back of the guy without the eyes. And he says, okay, we have now one workable guy. And he smashes both of them. V'danotam ke'achad. So HaKadosh Baruch Hu does the same thing. He brings the neshama, puts it back in the goof, makes Triyat HaMitim long enough to be done otam ke'echad. Not all of the Chachomim hold that this is true, but Rebbe Shita is that there is a Chaim for the din, even of Rishoyim. Done otam ke'echad, Shenemar, it says Beferish Yikra La Shamayim Eyal Ve'al Haaretz La Dinimot. HaKadosh Baruch Hu calls both the Shamayim and the Aretz together. So Yikra La Shamayim Eyal, that means the call to the Neshama to come to Din. The Ela Aretz Odinimo refers to the Guf, puts them together. Omer Le Antoninus Lo Rebbe, Bibnei Ma Chama Yotza B'Mizrach V'Shokad B'Ma'arav. How come the sun rises in the east and sets in the west? So Rebbe says, what kind of stupid question is that? And if it would have rose in the west and set in the east, you would have said, how come the sun rises in the west and sets in the east? So this is a principle, mamish, that the Rambam brings in the Mor Nevuchim. Any question that would be exactly the same question, if you reverse it, is a dumb question. That's the way things are. Okay, fine. So now, who's to say that there's any significance to any of these things, since you would have asked the same question in the inverse? All that means is you're looking for significance. I, Antoninus, have decided that it must be significant. Okay, so we can forget about that question. So Antoninus said to him, I'm not that stupid. I wasn't asking that. I was asking something that is obviously significant. That is, a lot of this astronomical stuff in which everything looks to us. I mean, the whole thing is obviously meant to look like something to us because, you know, probably if you got brains, you're going to end up believing in a Copernican universe. I mean, and then nobody would talk about sunrise and sunset. What would happen to all of the songs? So basically, if we're going to be talking about what things are meant to look like to us, so sunrises, sunset, and not only that, it seems to be very different the way things work in general, because, I mean, the way things work in general is that they just go back the way they are, you know? All of the other phenomena that we're familiar with, I mean, things go round and round, right? They start over again. Now, how come the way that we are meant to perceive things is that they don't go round and round when everything else goes round and round? How do you explain that? There must be some meaning to this particular weird stuff about the way heavenly bodies, local heavenly bodies move, and I'd like to understand what it is. So I'm asking you, why set? And I understand, let it basically go round and round, come up in, and we should basically see it going back where it came from, no? Omar Lane, That is meant to be a parable. Essentially, since we know that the Shekhinah is always b'mizrach, I mean b'ma'arav, because of the way that the Beis HaMikdash is built, with the Shekhinah always in the ma'arav, and the Knesset is in the mizrach, with the Shekhinah on the top of the Oren HaBris. So it's the same idea that it's as if they're bowing down. Tzva Hashamayim l'chamish tachavim. So it's as if they bow down to the presence of the Shekhinah. So Antonina said, if you want to do that, you should have the sun basically go to the middle of the sky and then disappear. Because, that's much more powerful kind of bowing down. I mean, this like slow kind of thing coming to the end, it should just fall down somewhere. Or titein shlama, and then it should set right there. Said Rebbe, no, if it would do that, people on the road would be suddenly set in darkness. Guys who were working wouldn't know when it's the end of the day. That would be very inconvenient. So we do it in a way that's convenient. Another conversation. Antonina said to Rebbe, at what point does a human fetus get a soul? Is it from the moment of Pekida, or is it from the moment of Yetzirah? So in other words, is conception, like, is that the time that a human already germ cells are considered to be alive? And, you got all of this Christian stuff and burning down the fertility clinics and all of that stuff. Is that real? Or does it go from the time in which there's a Yetzirah, and a Yetzirah, that's a minimum of 40 days that we need an actual formation of a workable organism? So Rebbe said, I would imagine that it would be Mishat Yetzirah. It would have to be from the 40th day. Antonina said to him, that doesn't make any sense. Because if it were truly alive, if a fetus were alive and not just a machine that is exhibiting signs of life, then it would never stick it out in the womb. Because, the moment you've got any organism, it immediately tries to be independent. So then it would try kicking its way out of the womb and would generally cause a premature end to the pregnancy. Must be that actually, wait, I'm sorry, I skipped? No, I skipped. Yeah, I went into the other. Please forgive me. Let's cut that out. Go back again. I jumped to the next argument. We're talking about the Yetzirah. Go back to the Sha'at Pekida. So Rebbe says to me, Sha'at Yetzirah. So Antonina said to him, and this makes sense to you? That from the moment that it forms, so you're telling me that it would be possible that it would live in a way that it could develop and it had no life to it? What would be keeping this thing alive and unspoiled if it weren't really living? So you're telling me, no, it's just mechanical. It has to be alive, not mechanical. It has to be, therefore, from the moment of conception. Now, my Rebbe, he was right. He's right, and in fact, I should have realized that it's a pasuk. It says, ufkudatcha shamra ruchi, that from the moment of Pekida, at that point, my neshama was guarded. Now, the next piece, which I had conflated, Omala Antonina Sorebi, from what point does a person get a Yetzer Hara? Is it from the moment of his Yetzira, or is it from the moment of birth? So Rebbe said, it's from the moment that the embryo is formed. So Antonina said to him, that doesn't make sense. The moment that you have this drive to your own creative acts and independence, so then there's no way that you would be sitting there quietly in a womb. You would be banging your way out of that womb. Ela mishaat yetziyah. It's got to be that the real Yetzer Hara, which is that Yetzer, to find your own way in everything, that must be only from the moment of birth. And indeed, Rebbe said, yes, he's right. Dover zeh limdeni antoninus. And I should have realized it from the pasuk. Mikra misayosh, namar lapetach, meaning at the doorway of the womb, chatat rovetz. That's when the sin awaits you and in lurking for you. Rish Lakish Rami. Now, there seems, getting back to Olam Haba, there seems to be a contradiction that Rish Lakish points out between the psukim. On the one hand, it says that Bam Iver Ufiseach Harav Yoledet Yachdav El Kahal Gadol Yashuvu Hena. So all of this is talking about in Yirmiyahu and what things will be like in Liasid Lava. And this is a general Asid Lava. It's referring to bringing back the people who were in Golus at the time of Mashiach, and then ultimately the bringing back of the dead and everything coming into an Olam Chodash. And so this we're calling in general Latid Lava. So there it says that the people will be, in fact, blind, lame. In other words, whatever it is that was wrong with you is still going to be wrong with you, le'ati lava. But on the other hand, it says that this is Yeshayahu, but still, I mean, it's referring to the same time, az yedaleg ka yal piseach, the lame are going to jump about like an antelope. And I mean, that doesn't sound like they're going to be lame. V'taron lashani lame, and the song, the people that could not speak will be singing. Ki nifku'u v'midbar mayim unechalim ba'arava, because water will come out in the desert, and live streams will come out in the wilderness. So is it things are like they were, things that don't work continue not to work? Or is it, as Yeshayahu said, everything being perfect? So, Haketza, the only way to explain both the Yirmiyahu and Yeshayahu is that Omdim b'muman umitrapim, that in fact, at first, everything will be recreated with whatever was wrong with them. And then HaKadosh Baruch Hu will fix them. Ula pointed out that on the one hand, the pasuk says, Bila hamavet lenetzach, so death will be wiped out, swallowed up forever. And on the other hand, it says, ki hanar ben mea shana yamut. So I don't understand. On the one hand, we have that the pasuk, both psukim are from Yeshayahu. One seems to say there will be no more death. And the other one says, a person who dies at 100 years old will be viewed as a terrible tragedy. A poor teenager died, and it says, Lo yemi sham od u yamim. There's not going to be such a thing as a person who did not fill his full life, mashma, that people will die, but that there'll just be longer lifespans. So how do you explain that? What's the problem? It's very simple. Lo kasha, can be Yisrael. Bila HaMavis LaNetzach is referring to Klal Yisrael. And where it says the child will die at 100, that's talking about Ovdei Kochavim. Ovdei Kochavim? Why do we need Ovdei Kochavim LaSid Lava? I thought we had enough trouble. What are they doing there? Well, we're talking about Ovdei Kochavim that have to do some work, no? I mean, doesn't it say in the pasuk also in Yeshayahu, "Vamdu zarim veraut sonechem"? I mean, who's going to be tending our flocks? Robots. I mean, you need some human feelings. Uvnei nechar ikarechem v'chormechem. So there will be the bnei nechar that want to be mechuber to Klal Yisrael, and this will be the way that they're mechuber. Rav Chisda Rami. Also, a contradiction. On the one hand, it says v'chafra halavana. So on the one hand, it says that when HaKadosh Baruch Hu will be Melech again, Bar Tzion, of Yerushalayim, and everything will be the Neged, Zekinav, Kavod. Okay, so that means that the moon and the sun will be worthless. All we have is the actual light from the Shekhinah. On the other hand, it says, Haya or halavana k'or hachama, v'or hachama yeshivatayim k'or shivat hayamim. I don't understand. Is it that they will be bosh and be meaningless in the light of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, so to speak? Or does it mean that they will become tremendously bright, meaning, according to the way the Mefarshim understand it, 343 times 7 times 7 times 7, all the Shivas Hayomim, 7 times what it was during those 7 days. So it'll be so much brighter than it is today. Which way? Lokasha. The way I explain it, says Rav Krista, is the pasuk that talks about these bright sun and moon is referring to Yimot HaMashiach, whereas in Olam Haba, there's no such thing as silly little nuclear furnaces. But wait a minute, what about according to Shmuel? Shmuel says, Ein bein olam hazeh l'imot ha-mashiach, ala she'ibud galuyot bovad. You can't have these supernatural effects during Yimot HaMashiach. According to Shmuel, there's nothing supernatural. Everything's exactly the same nature as we have today. The only difference is that we won't have trouble from all of these people in Columbia University. That's basically the difference. Should I say Tel Aviv University? Won't have trouble from them either. Anyway, so how do you explain it? According to Shmuel, you can't say that one is Le'olam Haba and one is Le'imot HaMashiach. Okay, so Shmuel will say that it depends where you are in the Olam Haba. Kan b'machane tzadikim, v'kan b'machane shechina, there's different madrigas. In the machane shechina, where you're in the presence of the ore of the shechina, there's no light from anything else. If you're just outside in the Machane Shechina, Machane Tzadikim, so then there's the light, but just much brighter. Rav Rami. We also have a contradiction in the way that the Torah describes HaKadosh Baruch Hu's promise to Yisrael. It says, Ani amit v'achye. I will take away life, I will kill, and I will bring back to life, which is mashma, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu will do a triat ha-meitim, and it will be the same way the person was. Ani amit, and I'll take that same person, v'chaye. But then it says, machatzti v'ani arpa. So, arpa, it says in the, this is in the Shira, where we talk about, I caused you to be wounded and to be hurt, and I will heal you. Which means that somebody who is hurt in Olam Hazeh, that he will be healed, so that the means he does not come back to life if he was missing a limb, or he had a pacemaker, or he was suffering from cancer. He'll be healed completely on the arpa. Says Rav, it means, Amar HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Ma she'ani memit ani mechayev. First, I bring back to life, and then that it should be clear that it's me who is healing them. Hodar ma she'machatzti ani arpa. Tana Rabbana. Looking at that pasuk more closely, Ani amit v'achaye, I cause death and I will bring back to life. You might think that that was referring to two different people. There are people that die, that comes from me. There are people that come into the world alive, that comes from me. So you might think that's what it means, like the way the world is. Yochel shtei mita be'achad, v'chayim be'achad. K'derech she'olam noheg. It's just saying, I am the one who brings life to the world, I am the one who brings death to the world, and it doesn't mean to the same person. Talmud Lomar, that's why the pasuk continues to say, machatzti v'ani arpa, as if it's the same process. That just like, mamechitza rufu'a be'achad, obviously, if it says, ani machatzti v'ani arpa, it means, I was the one who caused the wound and the pain in this person, and I will be the one who will heal it. It's the same person. Otherwise, it doesn't make any sense. So here too, af mita v'chayim be'echad. And this clearly is saying, ani amit v'achye, is a teshuvah lomrim ein triyat ha-beitim min ha-Torah. Anybody who wants to say that the Torah does not take for granted that there's triyat ha-meisim, this pasuk makes it very clear. Tanya, Omar Rebbe Meir, I'll give you other proofs of triyat ha-meisim. Now, all of these proofs are not meant to be specific single proofs. They're all meant to be facets of a totality in which everything is based on taking for granted. That was the idea of Bedover Zeh, Ani Ziyafti Sifrei Minim. You can try to erase as many indications of Tehillat HaMeisim that you want. They'll keep popping up, because when you have an underlying yesod about everything that you're describing as reality, there's no way that you could keep hiding it if that's the theme of the work. And therefore, what the Chachamim bring are so many different Ramazim and so many different facets that you have altogether an impossible work of Tchias HaMeisim. That's what was so beautiful about that. You try to erase it. Go ahead. So, Tanya. So we're going to bring a lot of different kind of Ramazim, none of which are on their own persuasive, and indeed each one of them, like we saw, there's always something to say about it. Tanya Omer Rabbi Meir. Minayin l'tchiyat amitim min haTorah, shenemar az yashir Moshe uvnei Yisrael et hashira hazot la'Hashem. It doesn't say that Moshe was shar. It says az yashir, that Moshe will sing this song. Kan l'tchiyat amitim min haTorah. You find the same thing about Yoshua. It says az yivneh Yoshua mizbeach la'Hashem. What do you mean yivneh? You should say azbana. But it doesn't say azbana. It says yivneh. Mikan, the Triat Amitim, Min HaTorah. And again, Min HaTorah doesn't necessarily mean from Chamisha Chum Shetera. We see we bring Rayas even from Tanakh. Elamiata. If that's what it means, how will you explain Az Yivne Shlomo Bamalech Boshukatz Moav? That's ridiculous. That what Shlomo HaMelech, after Tchias HaMeisim, is going to build a Mizbeach to this disgusting abomination of an Avodah Zarah that Moab used to worship? You really think that's what it means? We see from here that Shlomo HaMelech will end up worshiping Avodah Zarah latid lavo. I mean, that's crazy. No, there it means something else. There, we know that Shlomo HaMelech didn't really build. But because of the fact that he let these women in and wasn't careful to make certain that they would be nekarot totally from their Avodah Zarah, and in the end they went ahead and they built these little altars for themselves to keep up their old religion. So Ma'alel HaVakatuv Ki Ilu Bana. So the Torah is very upset with Shlomo, but it doesn't want to say Shlomo actually built it. It says, Az Yivneh, in the sense that it's constantly being built, so to speak, because he didn't take care of it. So it's Ma'alel HaVakatuv Ki Ilu Bana. But that, I mean, that doesn't apply to the Az Yashir. I'm Rabbi Yeshua Ben Levi, I'll bring you another remez. Inayin L'Tchiyat HaMeitim Min HaTorah, Shenemar Ashrei Yoshvei Veitecha, Od Yalalucha Sela. They are going to give you halal. What do you mean, going to give you halal? It should say, Hilalucha. But it doesn't say Hilalucha. It says, Od Yalalucha. They will still again give you halal. Mikando Tchiyas Meisim Min HaTorah. Yom Rav Yeshua Ben Levi, Kol HaOmer Shira, V'Olam HaZeh, Zoche V'Omra L'Olam HaBa. This is also Merames, that if a person was Mahalal Ta'Kadosh Baruch Hu, then Od Ya'alalu, Shinemar Ashrei Yoshvei Veitecha, Od Ya'alalu Chasela, you will continue to give Halal La'asid Lava. Reb Chiya Bar Ava says, I know from Reb Yochanan, a remez of Tchiyas HaMeisim Min HaTorah. Minayin l'tchiyat amitim min haTorah, sheneemar, kol tzofayich nosu kol yachdov yiranenu. To hear it saying, all of the Nevi'im will lift up their voice together and they will then sing. It doesn't say they sang, it says they will sing, which means that all of the Nevi'im will be miranen again. Bikan l'tchiyat amitim min haTorah. Again we see the Loshon Atid. V'omar Rabbi Chiya Bar Ava omar Rabbi Yochanan. You should know that even though we say that when it comes to giving a nevius, everyone has a signa in acher, but atidim kol nevim kulam omrim shira b'kol echad. When it comes to saying shira to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, all of them will be singing with the same voice and the same song. Kol tzofayich nasu kol yachdov yiranenu, and this they will do together.